Chapter 4. A man called Uva does not pay a 3 kroner surcharge. Uva gives her the plants, 2 of them. Of course, there weren't supposed to be 2 of them, but somewhere along the line there has to be a limit. It was a question of principle, Uva explains to her. That's why he got 2 flowers in the end.
Things don't work when you're not at home, he mutters, and kicks a bit at the frozen ground.
His wife doesn't answer.
There'll be snow tonight, says Uva.
They said on the news there wouldn't be snow, but as Uva often points out, whatever they predict is bound not to happen. He tells her this. She doesn't answer. He puts his hands in his pockets and gives her a brief nod.
It's not natural rattling around the house on my own all day. When you're not here, it's no way to live. That's all I have to say.
She doesn't reply to that either. He nods and kicks the ground again. He can't understand people who long to retire. How can anyone spend their whole life longing for the day when they become superfluous, wandering about, a burden on society? What sort of man would ever wish for that? Staying at home, waiting to die? Or even worse, waiting for them to come and fetch you and put you in a home, being dependent on other people to get to the toilet. Uva can't think of anything worse. His wife often teases him, says he's the only man she knows who'd rather be laid out in a coffin than travel in a mobility service van. And she may have a point there. Uva had risen at 5:45, made coffee for his wife and himself, went around checking the radiators to make sure she hadn't sneakily turned them up. They were all unchanged from yesterday, but he turned them down a little more just to be on the safe side. Then he took his jacket from the hook in the hall, the only hook of all 6 that wasn't burgeoning with her clothes, and set off for his inspection. It had started getting cold, he noticed. Almost time to change his navy autumn jacket for his navy winter jacket. He always knows when it's about to snow because his wife starts nagging about turning up the heat in the bedroom. Lunacy, Uva reaffirms every year. Why should the power company directors feather their nests because of a bit of seasonality? Turning up the heat 5 degrees costs thousands of kroner per year. He knows because he's calculated it himself. So every winter he drags down an old diesel generator from the attic that he swapped at a rummage sale for a gramophone. He's connected this to a fan heater he bought at a sale for 39 kroner. Once the generator has charged up the fan heater, it runs for 30 minutes on the little battery Uva has hooked it up to, and his wife keeps it on her side of the bed. She can run it a couple of times before they go to bed, but only a couple. No need to be lavish about it. Diesel isn't free, you know. And Uva's wife does what she always does, nods, and agrees that Uva is probably right. Then she goes around all winter, sneakily turning up the radiators. Every year, the same bloody thing. Uva kicks the ground again. He's considering telling her about the cat, if you can even call that mangy, half-bald creature a cat. It was sitting there again when he came back from his inspection, practically right outside their front door. He pointed at it and shouted so loudly that his voice echoed between the houses. The cat just sat there, looking at Uva. Then it stood up, elaborately, as if making a point of demonstrating that it wasn't leaving because of Uva, but rather because there were better things to do, and disappeared around the corner. Uva decides not to mention the cat to her. He assumes she'll only be disgruntled with him for driving it away. If she was in charge, the whole house would be full of tramps, whether of the furred variety or not. He's wearing his navy suit and has done up the top button of the white shirt. She tells him to leave the top button undone if he's not wearing a tie. He protests that he's not some urchin who's renting out deck chairs before defiantly buttoning it up. He's got his dented old wristwatch on, the one that his dad inherited from his father when he was 19, the one that was passed on to Uva after his 16th birthday, a few days after his father died. Uva's wife likes that suit. She always says he looks so handsome in it. Like any sensible person, Uva is obviously of the opinion that only posers wear their best suits on weekdays. but this morning he decided to make an exception. He even put on his black going-out shoes and polished them with a responsible amount of boot shine. As he took his autumn jacket from the hook in the hall before he went out, he threw a thoughtful eye on his wife's collection of coats. He wondered how such a small human being could have so many winter coats. "You almost expect if you step through this lot you'd find yourself in Narnia," a friend of Uva's wife had once joked. Uva didn't have a clue what she was talking about, but he did agree there were a hell of a lot of coats. He walked out of the house before anyone on the street had even woken up, strolled up to the parking area, opened his garage with a key. He had a remote control for the door, but had never understood the point of it. An honest person could just as well open the door manually. He unlocked the Saab, also with a key. The system had always worked perfectly well. There was no reason to change it. He sat in the driver's seat and twisted the tuning dial half forward and then half back before adjusting each of the mirrors, as he did every time he got into the Saab. As if someone routinely broke into the Saab and mischievously changed Uva's mirrors and radio channels. As he drove across the parking area, he passed that pregnant foreign woman from next door. She was holding her 3-year-old by the hand. The big blonde, lanky one was walking beside her. All three of them caught sight of Uva and waved cheerfully. Uva didn't wave back. At first, he was going to stop and give her a dressing down about letting children run about in the parking area as if it were some municipal playground. But he decided he didn't have the time. He drove along, passing row after row of houses identical to his own. When they'd first moved in here, there were only 6 houses. Now, there were hundreds of them. There used to be a forest here, but now there were only houses. Everything paid for with loans, of course. That was how you did it nowadays. Shopping on credit and driving electric cars and hiring tradesmen to change a light bulb. Laying click-on floors and fitting electric fireplaces and carrying on. A society that apparently could not see the difference between the correct anchor bolt for a concrete wall and a smack in the face. Clearly, this was how it was meant to be. It took him exactly 14 minutes to drive to the florists in the shopping center. Uva kept exactly to every speed limit, even on that 35-mile-per-hour road where the recently arrived idiots in suits came tanking along at 55. Among their own houses, they put up speed bumps and damnable numbers of signs about children playing, but when driving past other people's houses, it was apparently less important. Uva had repeated this to his wife every time they drove past over the last 10 years. "And it's getting worse and worse," he liked to add, just in case by some miracle she hadn't hurt him the first time. Today he'd barely gone a mile before a black Mercedes positioned itself a 4-arm's length behind his Saab. Uva signaled with his brake lights 3 times. The Mercedes flashed its high beams at him in an agitated manner. Uva snorted at his rearview mirror, as if it was his duty to fling himself out of the way as soon as these morons decided speed restrictions didn't apply to them. Honestly. Uva didn't move. The Mercedes gave him a burst of its high beams again. Uva slowed down. The Mercedes sounded its horn. Uva lowered his speed to 15 miles per hour. When they reached the top of a hill, the Mercedes overtook him with a roar. The driver, a man in his 40s in a tie and with white cables trailing from his ears, held up his finger through the window at Uva. Uva responded to the gesture in the manner of all men of a certain age who've been properly raised by slowly tapping the tip of his finger against the side of his head. The man in the Mercedes shouted until his saliva spattered against the inside of his windshield, then put his foot down and disappeared. 2 minutes later, Uva came to a red light. The Mercedes was at the back of the line. Uva flashed his lights at it. He saw the driver craning his neck around. The white earpieces dropped out and fell against the dashboard. Uva nodded with satisfaction. The light turned green. The line didn't move. Uva sounded his horn. Nothing happened. Uva shook his head. Must be a woman driver. Or road work. Or an Audi. When 30 seconds had passed, without anything happening, Uwe put the car into neutral, opened the door, and stepped out of the Saab with the engine still running. Stood in the road and peered ahead with his hands on his hips, filled with a kind of Herculean irritation, the way Superman might have stood if he'd got stuck in a traffic jam. The man in the Mercedes gave a blast on his horn. Idiot, thought Uwe. In the same moment, the traffic started moving. The cars in front of Uwe moved off. The car behind him, a Volkswagen, beeped at him. The driver waved impatiently at Uwe. Uwe glared back. He got back into the Saab and leisurely closed the door. Amazing, what a rush we're in, he scoffed into the rearview mirror and drove on. At the next red light, he ended up behind the Mercedes again. Another line. Uwe checked his watch and took a left turn down a smaller, quiet road. This entailed a longer route to the shopping center, but there were fewer traffic lights. Not that Uwe was mean, but as anyone who knows anything knows, cars use less fuel if they keep moving rather than stopping all the time. And, as Uwe's wife often says, if there's one thing you could write in Uwe's obituary, it's, at least he was economical with gas. As Uwe approached the shopping center from his little side road, he could just make out that there were only two parking spaces left. What all these people were doing at the shopping center on a normal weekday was beyond his comprehension. Obviously, people no longer had jobs to go to. Uwe's wife usually starts sighing as soon as they even get close to a parking lot like this. Uwe wants to park close to the entrance. As if there's a competition about who can find the best parking spot, she always says as he completes circuit after circuit and swears at all the imbeciles getting in his way in their foreign cars. Sometimes they end up doing 6 or 7 loops before they find a good spot, and if Uwe, in the end, has to concede defeat and content himself with a slot 20 yards farther away, he's in a bad mood for the rest of the day. His wife has never understood it. Then again, she never was very good at grasping questions of principle. Uwe figured he would go around slowly a couple of times just to check the lay of the land, but then suddenly caught sight of the Mercedes thundering along the main road towards the shopping center. So this was where he'd been heading, that suit with the plastic cables in his ears. Uwe didn't hesitate for a second. He put his foot down and barged his way out of the intersection into the road. The Mercedes slammed on its brakes, firmly pressing down on the horn and following close behind. The race was on. The signs at the parking lot entrance led the traffic to the right, but when they got there, the Mercedes must also have seen the two empty slots because he tried to slip past Uwe on the left. Uwe only just managed to maneuver himself in front of him to block his path. The two men started hunting each other across the tarmac. In his rearview mirror, Uwe saw a little Toyota turn off the road behind them, follow the road signs, and enter the parking area in a wide loop from the right. Uwe's eyes followed it while he hurtled forward in the opposite direction with the Mercedes on his tail. Of course, he could have taken one of the free slots, the one closest to the entrance, and then had the kindness of letting the Mercedes take the other. But what sort of victory would that have been? Instead, Uwe made an emergency stop in front of the first slot and stayed where he was. The Mercedes started wildly sounding its horn. Uwe didn't flinch. The little Toyota approached from the far right. The Mercedes also caught sight of it and, too late, understood Uwe's devilish plan. Its horn wailed furiously as it tried to push past the Saab, but it never stood a chance. Uwe had already waved the Toyota into one of the free slots. Only once it was safely in did Uwe nonchalantly swing into the other space. The side window of the Mercedes was so covered in saliva when it drove past that Uwe couldn't even see the driver. He stepped out of the Saab triumphantly, like a gladiator who had just slain his opponent. Then he looked at the Toyota. Oh, damn, he mumbled, irritated. The car door was thrown open. Hi there, the lanky one sang merrily as he untangled himself from the driver's seat.
Hello, hello,
said his wife from the other side of the Toyota, lifting out their three-year-old. Uwe watched repentantly as the Mercedes disappeared in the distance.
Thanks for the parking space, bloody marvelous, the lanky one was beaming.
Uwe didn't reply.
What's your name?
The three-year-old burst out.
Uwe, said Uwe.
My name's Nazanin,
she said with delight. Uwe nodded at her.
And I'm Pat,
the lanky one started saying. But Uwe had already turned around and left.
Thanks for the space,
the pregnant foreign woman called after him. Uwe could hear laughter in her voice. He didn't like it. He just muttered a quick, fine, fine, without turning and marched through the revolving doors into the shopping center. He turned left down the first corridor and looked around several times, as if afraid that the family from next door would follow him, but they turned right and disappeared. Uwe stopped suspiciously outside the supermarket and eyed the poster advertising the week's special offers. Not that Uwe was intending to buy any ham in this particular shop, but it was always worth keeping an eye on the prices. If there's one thing in this world that Uwe dislikes, it's when someone tries to trick him. Uwe's wife sometimes jokes that the three worst words Uwe knows in this life are batteries not included. People usually laugh when she says that, but Uwe does not usually laugh. He moved on from the supermarket and stepped into the florist's. And there, it didn't take long for a rumble to start up, as Uwe's wife would have described it, or a discussion, as Uwe always insisted on calling it. Uwe put down a coupon on the counter, on which it said, 2 plants for 50 kroner. Given that Uwe only wanted one plant, he explained to the shop assistant, with all rhyme and reason on his side, he should be able to buy it for 25 kroner, because that was half of 50. However, the assistant, a brain-dead, phone-texting 19-year-old, would not go along with it. She maintained that a single flower cost 39 kroner and 2 for 50 only applied if one bought two. The manager had to be summoned. It took Uwe 15 minutes to make him see sense and agree that Uwe was right. Or to be honest about it, the manager mumbled something that sounded a little like bloody old sod into his hand and hammered 25 kroner so hard into the cash register that anyone would have thought it was the machine's fault. It made no difference to Uwe. He knew these retailers were always trying to screw you out of money, and no one screwed Uwe and got away with it. Uwe put his debit card on the counter. The manager allowed himself the slightest of smiles, then nodded dismissively and pointed at a sign that read, Card purchases of less than 50 kroner carry a surcharge of 3 kroner. Now Uwe is standing in front of his wife with 2 plants, because it was a question of principle.
There was no way I was going to pay 3 kroner, rails Uwe, his eyes looking down into the gravel.
Uwe's wife often quarrels with Uwe because he's always arguing about everything. But Uwe isn't bloody arguing, he just thinks right is right. Is that such an unreasonable attitude to life? He raises his eyes and looks at her.
I suppose you're annoyed I didn't come yesterday like I promised, he mumbles.
She doesn't say anything.
The whole street is turning into a madhouse, he says defensively. Complete chaos. You even have to go out and back up their trailers for them nowadays. And you can't even put up a hook in peace.
He continues, as if she's disagreeing. He clears his throat.
Obviously, I couldn't put the hook up when it was dark outside. If you do that, there's no telling when the lights go off. More likely, they'll stay on and consume electricity. Out of the question.
She doesn't answer. He kicks the frozen ground, sort of looking for words. Clears his throat briefly once again.
Nothing works when you're not at home.
She doesn't answer. Uwe fingers the plants.
I'm tired of it, just rattling around the house all day while you're away.
She doesn't answer that either. He nods, holds up the plants so she can see them.
They're pink, the ones you like. They said in the shop they're perennials, but that's not what they're bloody called. Apparently they die in this kind of cold. They also said that in the shop, but only so they could sell me a load of other shit.
He looks as if he's waiting for her approval.
The new neighbors put saffron in their rice and things like that. They're foreigners, he says in a low voice.
A new silence. He stands there, slowly twisting the wedding ring on his finger, as if looking for something else to say. He still finds it painfully difficult being the one to take charge of a conversation. That was always something she took care of. He usually just answered. This is a new situation for them both. Finally, Uwe squats, digs up the plant he brought last week, and carefully puts it in a plastic bag. He turns the frozen soil carefully before putting in the new plants.
They bumped up the electricity prices again, he informs her as he gets to his feet.
He looks at her for a long time. Finally, he puts his hand carefully on the big boulder and caresses it tenderly from side to side, as if touching her cheek.
I miss you, he whispers.
It's been 6 months since she died, but Uwe still inspects the whole house twice a day to feel the radiators and check that she hasn't sneakily turned up the heating.